podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rainabovitz. Right now we're reading Girl Reporter from my Cookie Cutter Superhero series. Thank you to those who have asked about where they can get hold of Girl Reporter. It is currently out of print. Or to put it more kindly, it is between publishers. I will let you know if that changes, but at least right now you can hear the story right here on the podcast. Also, we only have a few days left of the Patreon special offer that I'm running, where people who pledge at $5 or more get a really awesome exclusive special limited edition enamel pin designed by the amazing Brisbane artist Kathleen Jennings. If you don't want to miss out on that, then you can pledge $5 to my Patreon today, as long as you do it before April the 18th. In 2019, I think it's 11 a.m. in the morning. Australian time is when it closes. So really, to be safe, you should do it before the 18th of April. Thank you everybody who has pledged already, and especially to those who were pledging to me all along. I love you all, and I appreciate you, and you're a big part of the reason this podcast happens. So hooray! Girl Reporter, Chapter 7. Blondes have more dimensional road trips. If Danny had come along on our dimensional road trip instead of the dark, and I'd thought to put platinum tips in my hair before we left home, it would be Kid Dark and four awesome blondes taking on the universe. Actually, we don't know for certain that the dark isn't blonde underneath that cowl of his. Griff used to be a redhead. Anything's possible. My mother was blonde last time I saw her. She did it every now and then, threw a little unexpected yellow into the rotation. It didn't suit her. Tina Valentina was a born brunette. A 21st century Rosalind Russell. You can't be a woman in the media these days without changing your look every 12 months or so, she told me once when I was 13. It's the only way to remind the audience we have new things to say. Madonna taught us that. I dyed my hair black and shoved it under the same beanie for 2 years straight because what the hell kind of messed up feminism were they peddling in the 1980s? Even now when I change up my hair colour because it's fun to look like a mermaid or an anime character. A small part of me asks the question, are you doing this to appear relevant? Then I remember I'm a girl on the internet and literally everything I do will make someone angry. And I colour my hair however the frick I want. Audrey was getting closer to Megadethra's palace zone, which we knew because there was a dot on Astra's screen getting larger and larger. We were slowing down, so instead of a swirling space vortex around our cruisy dimension ship, we were starting to see glimpses of all those other realities. The pictures were indistinct. Unlike the cosmic eggs, they weren't tuned to anyone in particular. It was incredibly unlikely we would see any familiar faces in the dimensions we swept through, as we gear changed down to a slow crawl. But that didn't stop us looking. Do you think there's a dimension out there where you're a superhero? Griff murmured. I nudged him. Do you think there's a dimension out there where you're not? He pulled a face at me. That's not what I am, Fry. And I'm a middle-aged folk dancer. Solar leaned against me on the other side, her warmth washing over my skin like a hug made out of kittens. Maybe there's a dimension where we're all slime monsters. With my luck, that's where we'll end up, said Griff. The Dark is our resident expert on slime monsters, Astra called out, laughter in her voice. His cowl and visor shifted in her general direction. We agreed never to talk about that. So, not long after I first joined the team, Solar punched Megadethra's cosmic ray to save me and got sucked into a slime dimension. Astra went on, her voice lilting into tease mode. Of course the Dark went after him. That man couldn't be trusted to find his way home from the train station, let alone a slime dimension, the Dark muttered. Griff and Joey had almost identical, my parents are so embarrassing expressions on their faces. I also noticed that Joey winced when Astra said solar without the original qualification. How often did she get that little reminder that so many people meant him when they said that name? Even me, I had to admit. It took them a week to get home, went on Astra. Only it was how long for you two? 2 years, said the Dark. 2 years, 12 different variations of the same slime dimension. I should be recording this for my vlog, I suggested. The Dark's visor lifted slightly. I knew a glare when I felt one. And that was a joke. Is that why you always tell me not to punch things? Joey asked the Dark. Because, you know, punching things is my thing. Audrey shook around us, shuddering for a moment. The world outside the portholes came into sharp focus as something that had to be palace-shaped. Well, when I say palace, it looked like a giant robot space bee had eaten the contents of Aladdin's magical lamp, a space station, and the prefect's bath from Harry Potter, chewed vigorously and then spat them all up together in a sticky mass of honeycomb? Wow, said Astra. This is a bathroom, right? Or is the whole place like this? It's so shiny. It hurts to look at it for too long, said Joey. And yet, I said, filming on my phone again, I totally want to go in that tub. Anyone? We have a mission, said the Dark. Oh, I'm sorry, I snarked back at him. Did you think I'd forgotten who we're here to rescue? He loomed over me, so imposingly masculine that I'm surprised the ship around us didn't dissolve into a sea of patriarchy. I don't think you take anything seriously. I gritted my teeth and smiled at him. You're not in touch with today's generation, are you? Irreverent humour is the only way we get anything done. It's that or curl up under a doona of despair eating smashed avocado on toast. The Dark hesitated, but only for a fraction of a second. You're a civilian, Ms. Valentina. Stay behind the rest of us. All the better to document our quest, I said sweetly, because I knew that would bug him. Hey, I'm more serious than I look, but that doesn't make me mature. Sola was the first to step out of Audrey and into the giant mutant space spa. She staggered for a moment, almost losing her footing. What is it? The Dark growled, hurrying after her. I'm fine, she said, shaking it off as he reached her side. I'm just a bit far from our sun, that's all. My battery's starting to drain. I wanted to ask if that was a metaphorical battery or actually a feature of... Yeah, best not to ask that question. Anyway, there were more questions to be asked right now. What are you two wearing? Sola and the Dark turned and looked at us. Astra startled out a laugh, pressing her hands to her mouth. Oh, I am not stepping off this ship, said Griff quickly. Too late, I said, hip-checking him. Not going to miss this. When they stepped from the ship into the atmosphere of the palace zone, both Joey and the Dark had changed physically. Hers wasn't so dramatic. She already wore a retro-style solar costume, basically a bodysuit featuring the Aurora Australis in blue and yellow. Her boots had now changed into something more go-go than her usual lace-up hikers, and her hair. Oh, her hair. Joey's shoulder-length blonde bob had transformed into a high, tightly curled Olivia Newton-John perm, topped off with a red headband that reminded me strongly of the Will You Be Solar's Girl advertising campaign of the early 90s, the one my mother almost sued three magazines over. The Dark's transformation was even more awesome. His swirling cape with the bright gleam of a visor had changed over the years, in slight increments, building towards the vision of sinister power that he sported today. But this dimension had flashbacked him into a costume that I swear he only wore for about 3 weeks in 1994. It was everything that was awful about superhero costuming before I was born. So many pouches! His cape had transformed into a cropped black leather jacket over a grey bodysuit. Bulging pouches hung from his enormous belt, and pockets were sewn into every square inch of the jacket. There was still a hood and visor because, of course... Was his costume the world's first threatening hoodie back then? I'd seen pics of this specific costume on Tumblr, but to be honest, I thought it was apocryphal. I'd never believe that the Dark allowed himself to be seen in public wearing such a thing.
I don't want to look in a mirror right now, do I? He said, in a voice that hinted he was finally losing his composure. Griff took the last step down. Astra bundled after him, laughing in anticipation. Griff immediately found himself wearing an adult-sized version of the black and dark purple Kid Dark costume he'd been stuck with back when he was tapped for the role of pre-teen super sidekick. His natural hair flared out the top. Carroty red! A look I'd never seen in person before. He even refused to strip off the brown hair dye when Billy Brett photographed him for Mum's book about J. Jupiter. They had to Photoshop the cover. Astra now wore something very like Astra One's original outfit of white and silver sparkles. A flared mini dress and way too much eyeshadow. Space girl chic seemed appropriate. I scrambled after them. My hoodie and jeans transformed into a neat designer suit made out of soft jersey, very mod 1960s. Griff snorted. Astra passed me a small mirror so I could check the damage. My hair was still purple but bobbed short, with an actual pillbox hat perched on top of it. I looked like an emo teen Jackie Onassis cosplayer. My mother rocked this very same look at an awards ceremony in 1988 when she was recognised for the writing she'd done around Solar and the newly revealed Aussie Butte superheroes. I did not appreciate the callback. Weird enough if this dimension was causing our appearance to change, but the selection of my outfit suggested this was personal. Targeted. Someone found us hilarious. You've been here before, right? Griff asked the Dark in a low voice, as we looked around the giant, gleaming royal bathroom, searching for a way out.
Once. Decades ago. We hijacked an invasion fleet from the Tantaris Collective to rescue Solar and that news team after the android replica debacle.
How big is it really?
The Palace Zone? Approximately the size of Jupiter.
It's all her house?
There are also gardens, but I would avoid them if I were you. Her taste in flora is carnivorous.
This is him enjoying himself, Joey whispered to me. He's less uptight than usual. Maybe it's a magic jacket, I replied.
I can hear you both, the Dark said sharply. There's nothing magic about this jacket, except the manner where it's constricting my shoulders.
That's what you get to spend for spending so much time in the gym, pointed out Griff. Astra hit a button on a small remote strapped to her wrist, and Audrey shimmered, to be replaced by a giant Venus flytrap in a steel pot, matching several similar plants around the bathroom.
Nice, I said admiringly. I could also disguise you as a fern if things get dangerous, Astra said.
Please don't.
This way, said the Dark,
and led the way up and out into a long metallic corridor.
This looks familiar, I frowned. I've definitely seen something like this before.
The corridor was an odd ovoid shape, and the doors set into it were heavily over-designed, all steel and glass and spiky joints. It looks like...
The machine, said the Dark in a very low voice. It looks so much like the machine. Isn't that interesting?
Could this be the secret my mother had risked her life to uncover? Was this why she was so desperate for the Mega Deathra interview? Was she searching for the answer to a question no one even bothered to ask anymore because it had gone unanswered for so many decades? Who sent the superhero machines to Earth in the first place?
This is cute, said Astra.
Don't touch it, said the Dark automatically.
You don't have to treat me like a child. I didn't... Ow! She said. Something metallic and whirring pushed out of the wall and rolled towards her. A shape that might have been a head or possibly a hammer unfolded with a creak of gears. I lifted my phone again.
It's an itsy bitsy robot!
Aww! Like, seriously? It might be about to kill us all, but it was super adorable. It made a rusty "kah" sound, and then said something high-pitched that sounded like
Take two.
Yep, said Griff. Take us to your leader. Ugh, I said, we should have left you on Audrey.
The robot said, take two, again, and spun on its wheels, lurching along the corridor. So many different traps it could be leading us into, I said.
Or, said Joey, it could be taking us to its leader.
Gonna have to step lively, said Griff, or it won't take us anywhere, because it will have left us behind.
It's at times like these, chasing a small robot down a corridor in an intergalactic palace, surrounded by unreasonably attractive superheroes, that I wonder what my life might have been like if my mother went into teaching, or science, or politics instead of journalism. The corridor widened out. As we hurried after the robot, we tumbled through an enormous arched doorway onto an enormous metallic balcony covered in... Here's the thing. I'm aware that I overuse descriptive words such as alien and intergalactic, and I'm aware that they aren't remotely helpful, and do rather add to the illusion that my life is a space cartoon. But when it's time to describe something like the flora on that balcony, tangling out of pots and tiles, climbing up the sides of this enormous cavernous space like a waterfall of green and pink tentacles, the main words that come to mind are alien and intergalactic. I had my phone out without even thinking about it and swung around to film the space because, goddamn! That was when I noticed the other flora, draped down all the way into a giant high-tech greenhouse boudoir. When I leaned over the edge of the balcony, sidestepping the persistent tiny robot to do so, I saw a massive bed, about twice the size of our extra-dimensional spaceship, in the centre of the room below, surrounded on all sides by the aforementioned intergalactic alien plant life. Trees sparkled with little lights. They were actually budding directly out of the bark. Sticky magenta stamens lolled out of bright, sumptuous flower heads. The ground was carpeted with a thick, velvety moss, the colour of sunshine. There were butterflies floating everywhere, above and below us, at least I thought they were butterflies, until one of them landed on Griff's face and I saw they had six wings. There was our host. For a glam vixen space tyrant who peaked in the 90s, Megadethra still looked good. She was about 6.5 feet tall, with silver platinum-coloured skin and bright green hair that looked like it had been permed during an electrical storm. Right now, her extraordinary body was stark naked, sprawled on her luxurious space bed. Silver silk sheets, which must be tough on laundry. Were the robots the ones in charge of her domestic arrangements? The first thing I noticed was that despite all rumours to the contrary, Megadethra did not have six breasts. The second thing I noticed was that Megadethra was not alone in that bed. Draped underneath one of the silver satin sheets, and a lot less blonde than the last time I saw her, was my mother, Tina Valentina. I dropped my phone. Okay, thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. We'll be back next week for more Girl Reporter with the chapter heading that I am very proud of, I Caught My Mother in Bed with a Homicidal Space Queen and All I Got Was This Lousy T-Shirt. So look forward to that next week. In the meantime, you can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. And if you pledge $5 this month, you also get a special edition enamel pin posted anywhere in the world just for you with a hedgehog. Okay, thanks for listening. See you next week.